Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Noon, we give you a Beltway Blitz, spinning you around town to the teams you care the most about. Jam them into one segment. We'll kick it off in just a moment. The Redskins respond again. Let's do this at 12:18 in about 13 minutes. They're 3-2. They've been up and down all year. Should we be excited because they were resilient again yesterday, or somewhat annoyed because of the discrepancy between performances week in and week out? We'll try to figure out the balance there, but let's kick off the Blitz with our insider, Chris Russell.
The Redskins.
Slashy, your thoughts on yesterday's narrow 23-17 win that took a late defensive stand?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously a lot to like. I thought special teams guys was the number one reason why they won. I understand the turnover is very, very important, but special teams caused that turnover. If you look at the big picture, not only the forced punt fumble, which leads to the Vernon Davis touchdown one play later from the 22-yard line, but also the Hopkins two long field goals, not just the one, the 56 and the 49er, plus he also had another one. Their punt coverage and kickoff coverage was great. Quick down that ball before the half at the 3-yard line, which gave them an opportunity to use their timeouts, get the ball back, which set up Stroman for a 10-yard punt return, which gave them the ball at the 33-yard line, and somehow they squandered that great bonus field position and got absolutely no points out of it. But I thought the special teams was monstrous. I can't remember one game, Grant, maybe you remember another, when Banks was here or something, where special teams won the Redskins primarily a football game. To me, that was the number one theme for me. And then, you know, it wasn't pretty on offense or on defense, but they were effective elsewhere. And I thought Jay Gruden made a real gutsy decision on that second touchdown drive to go for it on 4th-and-1 from his own 45. He could have been conservative. That's the second time he's done it on his side of the field this year. Ran quarterback sneak, Alex Smith on a 4th-and-1, got it, and then scored a touchdown in a game on that series. And that was a big one yesterday.
Russell, they ran it great. First of all, I was stunned they were able to run the ball with that kind of effectiveness against Carolina. I didn't think that was going to be on the menu. I thought they were going to have to throw it a bunch, and I didn't like their chances without Crowder and Thompson. But they ran it really well, including a couple big carries on first down. I'm actually more upset they didn't run it more, to be honest with you, because they're effective at it. When you're effective at something, by all means, keep going to it. But did that surprise you at all? They were able to run it like they did?
But no, because I wanted them, like you, Danny, of course, wanted them to run it more because Carolina came in. This is not the same Carolina defense for whatever reason. Maybe it was because Thomas Davis just came back into the lineup yesterday for the first time since a 4-game suspension. We know they were banged up at safety, hence the reason why they added Eric Reed a couple of weeks ago. They came in averaging 4.56 yards per carry allowed on the ground. So I thought the Redskins were going to be effective running the football. I thought they were going to come out and try to be more aggressive with the run. Unlike Monday night New Orleans, where I thought, okay, they would pass to set up the run against a weaker secondary and pass defense, I thought it would kind of be flipped the other way. It seems pretty clear right now after, again, establishing the run heavy in Arizona and Green Bay in the first half that Jay is basically flipping the script, at least over the last 6-7 days, where he wants to pass clearly to set up the run, which I know makes you guys very, very happy, and they've been moderately effective with it. I thought they were effective with it yesterday. I would have liked to see them be a little less aggressive in a couple of different spots.
Chris Russell is our Redskins insider. Thank you as always, buddy. Much appreciated.
Thanks, fellas.
Let's move along on the Beltway Blitz.
The Wizards.
Ben Standing the sports capital in town, getting you ready for the start of a Wizard season. Ben, I'm going to be honest with you. I think a lot of people are completely unplugged on the Wiz right now. They haven't really turned the page yet. Get them up to speed on what they need to know. Give us the refresher course as we get ready for a new campaign.
Well, sure. Obviously, the same. It's the same core that last year finished, made the playoffs, but finished at a disappointing eighth seed. And the question is, you know, is there enough pieces in here for them to get back into the top four? I actually think the top four in the East. I actually think the answer is yes. I mean, obviously, got to have some good health. Right now, for the most part, those pieces: John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter, Marquise Morris, looking pretty good. Their bench is much improved. They've got good depth, but to me, it all comes down to Dwight Howard. He hasn't even practiced yet, which means all that chemistry building opportunity with Wall and the others is gone. And he is obviously a very disruptive force, and I don't mean that in a good way, based on his recent history around the league and on the court primarily. And we have no idea what that's going to come like when he ever does get back on the court from the sore back issue he's got. So it is a big time up in the air scenario with him. But I actually do think that the Wizards, if he can somehow be reasonable, actually can make a move back up the top into the top four in the East.
So it means Jan Mahinmi starting, Ben, and then after he gets 3 fouls in 4 minutes, then what's the plan most nights? Because I'm not counting on Dwight Howard to come back anytime soon. He's been day-to-day for 3 months now, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better. Whoever said he could go to China on that plane should be fired immediately. But here we are. What's the plan going to be? Are they just going small? Is it Markieff Morris at the five? What's the idea here?
Yeah, I think that's going to be right. I mean, I would be surprised at this point if Dwight Howard plays in the opener on against the Heat and this week. And right, I suspect it is Jan Mahinmi. I suspect you're correct. 3 fouls in the first quarter is definitely in play, which will limit his minutes. You know, in preseason, Jason Smith's three-point shot looks like it's been rediscovered after a debacle last year. I'm not saying that means you should be playing him 30 minutes a game. I'm just saying he looks like he could be a little more effective than he was a year ago. And I can tell they really like the option of using Jeff Green as that, you know, small ball five. I mean, Jeff Green, for some of his downside, he's a very versatile player, a really good athlete who can defend all over the court. I'm not saying that's your go-to answer in the middle, especially when you had a solid guy like Martin Gortat the last few years, and the same. That's kind of where they're at right now, which is definitely a scary thought that those are the three options for sure.
Ben, the East is more wide open than it's been in the past. That's not to say that there aren't some juggernauts. Boston should be very good as an example. But without LeBron James, is there a feeling in the Wizards locker room like maybe the seas have parted here?
Yeah, 100%. I used to always note that whenever we would talk to the players about sort of their hopes and dreams for the season, it always seemed to stop at the Eastern Conference Finals, that they wouldn't even release publicly, let themselves even dare to think about advancing beyond, because obviously the LeBron roadblock was real. And like you said, yes, Boston looks to be very formidable. Toronto, if Kawhi Leonard is back to his MVP form, will be there as well. And Philadelphia's got those two young kids, and that's not even discounting some of the other teams in the East. But yeah, none of that is LeBron James. None of that is such an impediment that you don't think you have a chance. So yeah, I think, look, if the Wizards can get back to where they were, you know, 2 years prior when they got 49 wins, one game away from the Eastern Conference Finals, when they get back to that level of play on both ends of the court, consistency, especially on defense, you know, I think it's conceivable they can get the mix, and I think they actually believe it as well, which is important. But like I said earlier, you know, the Dwight Howard thing just gives me pause to really predict too much for this team, but at least I think they do believe that without LeBron, that there is more hope for sure.
Ben, as you know, I'm just a cranky pessimistic fan. So last year, the thing that I was pre-annoyed about as it kind of the year went on was John Wall not being in shape, and then the knee situation, then he opted for surgery. I was annoyed about that all season long. My pre-annoyance this year is twofold. One, Dwight Howard and his back. That's number one. But number two is Kelly Oubre playing a lot of minutes instead of Thomas Satoransky. I'm pre-annoyed about it. I can see it coming. How do we get Sato more minutes? He is way more effective at any role that he's designated, whether it's backup point guard or some of those Oubre small forward wing defender type minutes.
Yeah, I think that this is a chance that there is a strong possibility that what your hopes and dreams come true. I mean, I think Oubre is going to be given some rope early on. Look, he's been essentially their sixth man the last couple of years. He was a relatively recent first-round pick. They obviously want him to succeed. But unlike the last 2 years, Scott Brooks does not have to sit around and watch this guy, you know, jack up bad shots or get lost in team defense the way he did a year ago. The Austin Rivers addition, I think, is a big deal. The Wizards now have a guy who can run the offense through, who's, you know, a pretty effective scorer. And I really liked what I saw with the Rivers-Satoransky combination in the backcourt off the bench. And with Satoransky's versatility, and more importantly, the fact that Scott Brooks kind of views Satoransky's versatility as his primary benefit, I actually do think that when you sort of get to maybe a nine-man rotation, that unless Oubre's game picks up a lot, that Satoransky jumps him over time. Maybe, I don't know if time means game 3 or game 20, but I do think over time, unless Oubre changes a lot, that Satoransky will actually pass him in the rotation, which
Thursday
I agree with you,
night.
Is a good thing.
Wizards heat. Ben, thanks so much. We appreciate you.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks, guys.
That is your Beltway Blitz. Next, the Redskins are 3-2. They're in first place. They looked great against the Cardinals, then they lost badly to the Colts. They looked awesome against the Packers, then they got embarrassed by the Saints. Yesterday, they bounced back with another win. Should we be happy that they always respond, or mad that they can't ever play two good games in a row? Next on The Fan. Redskins are 3-2. They are in first place. They beat the Panthers 26-17 at FedEx Field yesterday afternoon. Adrian Peterson rushed for 97 yards, averaged 5.7 per pop. Alex Smith did not turn the ball over, threw two touchdowns, tying a season best 88 quarterback ranking. Jordan Reed went from being targeted twice a week ago to being targeted 9 times and catching a 5-reception, 36-yard performance for him. Vernon Davis caught 3 balls, a season best 48 yards through the air, and a touchdown for the aging wonder at tight end. But Danny, we're back on the roller coaster with the Redskins.
This is the good part.
1 week they're outstanding, the next week they're terrible. So this past week they were due to respond, to come out and play well. And who would have thought they'd come out and take a 17-0 lead on Carolina, where you get some fortuitous bounces, the fumble on special teams, you take advantage of them, the 22-yard touchdown pass to Vernon Davis on the next play, they actually mount the drive, Paul Richardson makes a sliding touchdown catch on a nice play by Smith to stay in the pocket, in the red area. They were up 3 possessions. They were up 17 points. Now, they did the thing they've done in all 3 of their wins, which is they didn't score in the second half with a touchdown. They didn't move the ball effectively at all. And they kind of lulled themselves to sleep when they had the ball, and they weren't able to do much until the final drive when they put the game away with a field goal. However, Danny, I was watching the game yesterday, and normally all I can do when they're winning and playing well is kind of fist pump and say, this is it. This is the good Redskins. I kind of reached my breaking point yesterday where, sure, I was thrilled about that, but I was multitasking while also saying, this is not okay anymore. Mm-hmm. Why can't they do this more often? So I ask you, and we open up the phones and we ask you guys at 800-636-1067, does anybody else, as they're watching yesterday, think, as much as they think, oh, this is good, they're playing very well, where is this all the time? Why are they so maddeningly irresponsibly inconsistent? How can they look so terrible against Indianapolis, so futile and useless against New Orleans with 15 days to prepare? Should we be happy that they always bounce back, or mad because they have this in them and they don't show it? They're like the student, Danny, who when they want to excel, aces the test, but the rest of the time, they don't bring a pencil, they don't really show up, they don't care.
And even in game, as you've kind of touched on, with the only second half touchdown they have is in garbage time against New Orleans after a weird turnover. This is a group that when the plan, this is how I view it, GP. I think this is when the coaches can get in the room, come up with a plan, come up with some ideas, oftentimes it works. It's now worked in 3 games, I would say. Right now, it hasn't worked in a couple games. Colts game, Saints game, that whatever plan they came up with stunk, or, you know, whether it was something else, we don't know. But 3 times they've gone, here is our idea, here's our plan, this is how we diagnose it. They don't have counterpunches, and this is my view. because they don't have enough offensive skill talent. They don't have elite talent when it really in places where even if you have a good design, even if you have a good concept against us, we've got Julio Jones or we've got Antonio Brown or we've got somebody that you can't stop. This is all, you know, you can't stop Jordan Reed, but to the tune of 5 catches for 36 yards. You can keep him in front of you for the most part. There's nobody that scares defenses, really and truly scares them. The Redskins have effective players. I would take Jamison Crowder, Jordan Reed, and Chris Thompson on my team anytime. They are really good at what they do, but what they do doesn't eat up chunk yards in a chunk yardage league. What they do doesn't get you 25 a pop on first down if you single cover Antonio Brown. They don't have that in their bank. So you get things like happened in this ballgame where they have a chance to put the game away at the end of the first half, plus starting the second half with the football. And they go three and out basically two times while doing that. They squander that opportunity. It's exasperating to watch them, but sometimes because of what they show, as you kind of touched on, that they can do and are capable of it, and then to sort of say either where people look at them as they're getting conservative, I don't think that's what it is. I think adjustments are made, and they kind of go, well, you figured out our plan. You figured out what we can do with this game, so we'll just hold on for dear life. It's not the attitude that, oh, our defense is so good it'll just bail us out, and all we need is 17 points in this one. It's a, we don't have any other trick in our bag.
I actually think that you're 100% right about the comparison to whatever doesn't allow them to start fast the weeks after they win is the exact same character trait, the exact same portion of the DNA, I think you're right, that doesn't allow them to thrive when they're up big. You know, whatever that is, you talk about just dealing with prosperity, but there is a natural letdown. I don't know who you blame. I don't know what you would say the reason is. I mean, everybody has some say in it. So Jay Gruden's a factor. The staff's a factor. The players are a factor. It's kind of a universal across the board thing. But when you're up big, you add the next touchdown. Think about like the Dallas game yesterday against Jacksonville. The Cowboys offense is far from exotic and it is not prolific or dynamic in any capacity. It's actually the opposite of that. But they got up on Jacksonville in one of those games where it was clear the Jaguars just weren't playing well, a la the Cardinals in week one, see the Packers in week three, and to some extent the Panthers yesterday, although they were a little bit better than those other two teams the days that the Redskins beat them. But the point is, you just choke those teams out. You show no mercy. You give them nothing. And you take from them everything, Danny. You've got to make sure that there is no momentum-grabbing play or sequence, or you don't kick yourself in the shin and shoot yourself in the foot. The Redskins have just not been able to do that. We now know, looking back, the Cardinals eventually benched Sam Bradford, or else I don't know if they would have scored yet this season. But that offense and that team was really, really bad. And that actually turned into a game for a couple of minutes. Just like the Packers game, if not for putting the game away with that last drive, finally turned into a football game again. So I'm right now, I'm frustrated, like the rest of you guys are, with I don't need to win 5 games in a row. I'm not dumb. I know that they're not favored in every game. I believe that that matters. I don't think they're great. And so if they played the Patriots this weekend or the Chiefs this weekend,
right,
as an example, to say, well, they got to win 2 in a row, don't lose again, that's silly. But it's not even the result. I'm talking about the process. It's the caliber of performance. It's how they seemingly prepare. It's how flat they are or are not. Every week it changes. Next, we'll take your calls on this. 800-636-1067. First question, I guess, would be, who do you blame or why do you think it is that every 7 days this team is the opposite of what it was the week before that? In a way that even in a parity-stricken league, no one else is on this level. I mean, the Redskins are the ultimate anybody's guess kind of club. And the other question might be, how much of a good thing is this? Because a lot of teams stay bad for 3-4 weeks at a time. They don't seem to have that club in the bag. But it's also a bad thing because they can never string them together. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Redskins Park. I'm in Boston, where I've been covering the league championship series at Fenway Park. I actually fly to Houston today, Danny, after the show.
Oh, this afternoon you do?
Yeah, so here's my question for you. I think I know what you're going to say, but I want to get you to coach me up on this. So my flight is at 5:47 out of Boston.
Okay. As I recall, the airport is not too far from like downtown Boston,
that up.
Right?
I'm assuming it's like 20 minutes from where I am right now.
I think it is, yeah.
So I'm done at 2, and the flight's at 5:45. Question I've got is, part of me wants to find like a really cool place in Boston to go eat lunch. But you know me, I'd rather get to the airport, not have to worry about it. Just, I got bags with me anyway, so I'm lugging around a suitcase and a big bag with a, you know, an Uber to a restaurant or whatever. Do I just go to the airport, get over there by 3 o'clock, and then I'm there about 3 hours early before my flight?
I generally default to that. You know what I mean? You might linger around the studio area if there's something close by where you're broadcasting from. Maybe I would eat there. But, yeah, the extra stop just turns into a hassle, lugging your bags around and stuff like that. That's just always my feeling. The airport and that kind of travel stresses me out anyway. I'd rather just, as you know, I'd rather just be there than I can be comfortable for as long as humanly possible. Not that waiting around in airports is comfortable. But if there's something right next to where you're at, I would do that. But if you got to get in an drive around, then stop, then do a second move to get to the airport, that turns into pain in the butt territory.
Grant.
Yes.
Did you make it to the Green Dragon Tavern yet?
So here's the problem, Tommy. I did not get to the Green Dragon Tavern, although we have set up an appointment of sorts, if you will, at the old GDT when we come back for the back end of this series, which, assuming nobody wins the next three games, is going to be next weekend. So it looks like we're looking at a Saturday appointment.
Okay, because I was going to say you could Uber there because you would be halfway to the airport at that point. We're keeping it really local for Boston people right now. But you would be halfway to the airport. Then you could just have lunch and continue on your journey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't hate that idea at all. All the images when I looked up the food at that place are just unbelievable, by the way. Now, we do have lunch planned there for next weekend, but I don't see why I wouldn't do that. If it's halfway, I'll have to throw it.
You could go twice.
Why not?
There's no harm in that.
That's the thing you sleep on a little bit, Danny, is Boston Thommy has given me a couple of strong recs.
Dude, that is as local a Boston guy to get your resources from as anybody that you could find here in the DMV. Thommy knows Boston.
He is to Boston what you are to New York. By the way, speaking of flights, I was at the airport flying out here, going back to Friday night, and I bumped into your wife and son, little Bill Roland, in the airport, which was pretty cool. They just happened to be sitting right next to me, which was hilarious. Did Bill enjoy his first ever flight? Did he get some pilot wings?
He had a great time. He had a great time. So, as you know, it's irresponsible to fly with a young child. You're selfish, and no one should do it. Once they get to a certain age, which my oldest son is now, it becomes less selfish and appropriate to fly with that child because the child can listen to instructions and can actually be quieted down if he throws a temper tantrum. Again, everyone who flies with a young child, as a father, speaking from a point of correctness, is a selfish jerk. So anybody who does it is wrong, and you shouldn't be allowed to do it. The first airline to offer child-free flights, I will give that airline my patronage forever and always, regardless of cost. But he did. He got his first flight experience, was very excited, was very happy with it, and overall, I think it was very good. There was a delay, I guess, which is why they were there at the same time as you. They were supposed to leave at, like, I think 3-something or whatever, maybe 4-something, but apparently their flight was delayed a bit. So 20 minutes worth of you guys, apparently you, my wife and son sitting across from each other, and then it finally took someone looking up from their phone to be like, oh, hey, by the way, I know this person, and we've been here for a while.
I was busy just reading a bunch of stories on my phone, and at one point, I literally was paying for my bill, and I was like, well, let me go see if I can find them walking around the terminal. And as I got up and grabbed my bag, I just about hit little Bill Roland's legs with my bag as he was sitting next to me. I said, well, lo and behold, there they are.
Would you look at that?
Had to hook him up with some Twizzlers for his flight. And
I saw so many pictures of his Twizzlers that Uncle Jeep's got him. So exciting.
Did he love the Twizzlers?
Oh, dude, he loves Twizzlers so much.
He says Twizzlers in a funny way. He says, he adds a syllable. He says Twizzlers.
Twizzlers, yeah. He adds like an emphasis A right in the middle, that it's not correct, and you can't tell him that he's wrong.
We both love Twizzlers, though. They're very
Twizzlers.
Good. I eat mine at the movie theater. He eats his 30,000 feet above the ground. Let's go to the phones. Should we be happy that the Redskins always bounce back, or upset that they can't seem to just play good football multiple weeks in a row? Kyle is in Fairfax. How are you, Kyle?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I don't think you can be happy for a few reasons. One, I like Danny's point about how the offense has limited skills, but I think Chris Thompson, Paul Richardson, and Jordan Reed could probably get you, I don't know, one second-half touchdown in 2018, which is really, I mean, isn't that amazing, right? Like, the Patriots and Chiefs are putting up 80 points, and it's a shootout league, and we have a team where, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you haven't heard this before, if someone asks you tomorrow, I'm going to go to a Redskins game, what to expect, and someone says, well, I think they're going to get a big lead and maybe hold on to win the game, that sounds like every game at FedEx Field over the last 5 years. So the problem hasn't gone away. I've seen nothing that says that that's going to get better. I didn't see anything against the Panthers that stuck out to me that said, oh, that's been different from games of last year or earlier this year.
Kyle, think about this, too. Thank you for the call. Think about this, because you got me on another path here. My buddy texted me this morning, and this is actually via Dan Steinberg. I think Danny referenced this. This is not a five-game sample, though. We can make this into a, wow, it's been a quirky start to the year. It's been a weird first 6 weeks for the Redskins. They're up and down and topsy-turvy. They are 1-1 in their last two games, 2-2 in their last four games, 3-3 in their last six games, 5-5 in their last 10 games, 6-6 in their last 12 games.
Oh, it goes on.
7-7 in their last 14 games.
Is that it?
10-10 in their last 20 games.
Surely that's all.
16-16-1 in their last 33 games, 18-18-1 in their last 37 games.
28-28-1 over their last 57, Grant.
Yeah, this is not just what they are for the moment. This is essentially what they have been for 4 years now under Jay Gruden, since he inherited a bad team that had a bad season. And he, to his credit, improved them to being kind of a middle-of-the-pack, mediocre club.
But I love Kyle's point, and I think he's dead right about it. I think the time to celebrate, hey, they bounce back from adversity, that's when you're coming off 3-13, 4-12 seasons.
Yep.
That's when you do that.
I can even give you two seasons of that, Danny. I can't give you four plus.
And that's where I'm at on this. This is an organization, and I think this is the theme of this year, theme of last year, and it needs to be the lens we look through everything that they do, every move that they make or don't make. They believe they're ready to compete now. They have an aging roster. Their running back is going to be 34 years old. Their quarterback, who they just paid a bunch of money to, is 34. It's not like Trent Williams is young. It's not like their core is a bunch of young kids. Now, they've got some nice young pieces. We've talked to Allen, Daron Payne, et cetera. They've got a few players that are nice and young. And, yes, that's building for the future. But the stars, quote-unquote, their big pieces have been around for a while, are veterans. This is a veteran team designed to compete right now. So no more. We can't have the, hey, we'll be 8-8 if everything kind of works out. You need to start getting ahead of where you were a couple years ago, and they're not, and that's maddening.
And I don't think it's guesswork or some big mystery how we got here either. I mean, you can make the case Jay Gruden's career has been this. Like, he's a pretty good coach, maybe not a great one. Your quarterback is a pretty good quarterback, not a great one. Your defense is solid. It's not exceptional, but it's pretty good. Your running back is going to have weeks where he's really good and weeks where he looks 33 years old. I mean, when you put your roster together with a lot of options, whether they're players or whoever it is, like that, then that's what your team becomes. Wookie of the Year on Twitter says this is exactly the problem with Smith helming a decent, not great team. Scoring 23 points a week is a great way to assure you miss the playoffs, and just as surely do not pick in the top five, meaning, you know, take those major steps. And that is, as we say, a dangerous thing. When you're not getting that elite level, high-end draft pick in the top five or the top eight or the top 10, and you're picking in that 13, 15, 18, 20, one range like they have over the last few years, because you're in the middle of the pack, it does make it hard to jump violently forward. What do you guys make of this team through five games, and how we should feel about the fact that they are never the same team in consecutive weeks? More of your calls next. We can also spin you around a few of the big stories in the NFL coming out of week six on Sunday. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan.
We'll be right back.
Victory Mondays mean the show originates from Redskins Park, where Danny's hanging out in Ashburn. I'm in Boston, where last night fans in this town were multitasking. Red Sox winning an ALCS game and the New England Patriots beating the Kansas City Chiefs. Actually, a much closer game in the end, Danny, than it looked like it was going to be, because New England led at one point 27-9, and then Pat Mahomes, four touchdown passes, and the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill, 142 yards and three touchdowns, came storming back. It was a 40-40 game, a rare, epic matchup on paper that turns into exactly what it was advertised as on national TV for Sunday Night Football, a classic. But in the end, Tom Brady had the ball last, and that meant New England was going to be okay.
TP, 50 seconds. Brady, deep down the sideline. He goes for Gronkowski. He has it. Josh Short takes him down, but the ball is inside the 10-yard line.
He's been so silent all night long. And then finally, they uncork him in the biggest moment.
Three catches, I forgot we had 97 yards for Gronkowski.
Yeah, just three catches, but they found him down the field. There's a great catch and run from Gronkowski in there, too. You know I get excited about this. There had never been a 43-40 NFL football game until it was last night with those two great offenses going at it. That, to me, is your AFC title game preview, unless Kansas City, you know, starts to falter. We've seen some weakness from Mahomes here in the last couple weeks. Two interceptions last week. Had a couple bad ones in this game. That one decision he made to try to force it into the end zone, throwing back across his body, is just, you know, some people say, that's a gunslinger. No, that's a bad decision. You can be a gunslinger and make good decisions. That was dumb, making that throw. But he's still excellent. He's still incredible. Still does things that very few people can do. That was an entertaining game, as good as the NFL has to offer right now.
Yeah, he's going to make throws like that. He's a kid. I mean, he started half of a season's worth of games at this point, and I think that's easy to forget. But the four touchdowns to go along with the two picks, 352 yards, he gave the Chiefs a chance. Here he was after the game.
First off, you're playing a great opponent in a great atmosphere. And so just to be able to go against the best, I mean, you want to compete against them every single day. And we got down, put ourselves in a huge hole. And I'm just proud of my team on how we fought to get back in the game. And we had the lead at one point, and then we ended up not coming out with the win. But just that fight, I mean, it's something you can carry on and to the rest of the season.
83 combined points, as Danny mentioned, in the 43-40 final. To me, if the Chiefs would have had the ball with like a minute left after that, I think they probably would have kicked and tied and we'd have gone to overtime, or maybe they would have won. I saw last night as a game where the offenses were a lot better than the defenses, and both Kansas City and New England, as good as they are, 5-1 and 4-2 respectively, they got major concerns when they don't have the football.
It's not getting much better. Now, when Eric Berry plays, they are better, especially just, you know, not giving up some of the deep stuff. But it doesn't look like they can stop anything, really. I mean, New England had the entire offensive menu at their disposal last night. By the way, Sony Michel is legit, and he works really well that offense. And you know what they're going to do with James White when he's in the game. But you want to take away Gronk, and that's what everybody's tried to do through a few weeks? Fine. Enjoy that. Enjoy taking away Gronk, because we've got other places to go with the football, especially now with Edelman back. Brady's the maestro at this point. The ball's going to go to the right spot. It's going to be on time. Everything is open. If I'm playing them, I don't know what I do. I don't know what I do to try to slow them down and stop them, because they can do everything. Everything is available to them pretty much all the time on offense.
The Steelers had a big lead on the Bengals, who came storming back. And in the end, Ben Roethlisberger and Pittsburgh got a win they needed to improve to 3-2-1 and climb back into things in the AFC North.
Roethlisberger lets it fly. Oh! Steelers, brilliant.
28-21 final, touchdown, two-point conversion, Roethlisberger to Brown after they'd fallen behind by a point. The more involved Antonio Brown is, the better things are going to be for these Steelers. I think that goes without saying. Yesterday, though, with Le'Veon Bell on the precipice of returning, James Conner had one final game that said, make sure you don't forget about me when he comes back. Rushed for a 111 and two touchdowns in the contest.
Really good football game. Really, really good game. I don't know how much of this you were able to kind of catch and watch. Every commercial break for me, it was, you know, it was red zone, and that was kind of featured here. Back and forth. Cincinnati held their own. As you said, they got a lead with a buck 18 left. Joe Mixon, 4-yard TD plunge. Everybody kind of assumed, as it was 21-20 at that point, that Pittsburgh was going to try drive down. They had all their timeouts and look to set up yet another Chris Boswell field goal. Well, there's a play that the one that the highlight that you played there, it looked like a pick play, but the NFL referee explanation was the defender's the first person that touched the offensive player, and he, you know, that's sort of how they ended up colliding with each other to free Antonio Brown up to scamper past everybody. But what an ending. Really good divisional game. Pittsburgh looks like they're back defensively. I thought they were pretty impressive, holding Cincinnati to only those 21 points.
Half game now separating the Bengals and the Steelers in the division. Pittsburgh needed that one, but Roethlisberger knows it's not time to start standing watching yet.
Standings, I mean, that is what it is. I don't know where we stand in terms of how many games out of front. That's whatever. We just got to win football games. We didn't have a very good September. We got to play better in October. We're going to enjoy this win, AFC North football, and have a little bye, get a little rest, and get ready to go.
I want to call some attention real quickly to a stunner for me yesterday, and that was the Miami Dolphins beating the Chicago Bears. The Bears, what an embarrassing loss for them in that they had a golden opportunity with Brock Osweiler starting, no Ryan Tannehill, to beat Miami and get to 4-1. And instead they lost in overtime in a game in which they did not score until halftime. They were shut out in the first half. They scored 28 points in the second half. The game goes to OT. And in the end, it was too much Albert Wilson. Chris Russell must have been dancing the jig somewhere. 6 catches for 155 yards and 2 scores on the day.
Here's 1st and 10. Osweiler throws complete. That's Albert Wilson.
CBS on the call. Osweiler 380-3 to go along with a pair of interceptions in a rare start. That was as productive as he's been in a long, long time. Mitchell Trubisky, 3 touchdowns, a pick, 316 yards for Chicago. Still no running game really for the Bears. The Dolphins got 101 rushing yards from 1,000-year-old Frank Gore yesterday.
And Kenyon Drake had the game won early on in overtime, but fumbled at the 1/3 yard line. And Chicago drove down and missed a field goal. And then, of course, Miami wins it. That was a crazy, 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 crazy game. And you touched on Frank Gore, who, famously, he's 127 years old, had himself over 100 yards in this ball game. But I can't explain to you what I saw. I can't explain to you how that happened, the way that it went down. Chicago looked multiple times over like they had this one in hand, and they couldn't get it done. Wilson, multiple touchdowns of longer than 40 yards in this game. He was the story.
He absolutely was, and the Dolphins have become a story now at 4-2, a surprising contender in the AFC. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. The big one at 1 o'clock next at 1:30 today. Our buddy Will Brinson spins us around the National Football League. A lot still to break down from the Redskins win. Give out some attaboys and do not forget about in our final hour next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.